My name is Tosh and I'm an alcoholic. And I have the honor to introduce our speaker. His name is Anthony with 8.5 months. His advice to the newcomer is get a big book, read first 164 pages, work the steps. His favorite color is blue and he's oldest of 9 kids. So welcome our new speaker.
Hello.
Hello.
My name is Anthony Williams. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me to share, Bill and the rest of the group. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes for this meeting, and I really appreciate that this meeting's here. Let's see. I appreciate that there's an audience here to share my story with. I think that what the big book says is that nothing will keep me from drinking so well as sharing my experience with another alcoholic. Intense work with another alcoholic, and this counts. It's what they told me. So this counts. So everything that I do in life starts a whole lot better if I take a little second and invite God into it. He can do it a whole lot better than I can. When I run the show, things don't go too hot. So if you don't mind, I'd like to take another moment of silence and kind of invite God into the room, into the meeting. I'll meet you back here in just a minute. Amen. Thank you. That was probably more for me than for you. I believe that God's always in the room, but from what I've heard from a lot of knowledgeable people, they have a better relationship with God if they make that conscious connection and invite Him into the room. So anything that I do goes better if I invite God into it, whether it's a meeting or the kid's ball game or anything like that. I know from experience that my life run on my will. Like I said a minute ago, it goes downhill real quick. I wasn't created to be the manager of my life. God was, so it makes sense that I shouldn't. That I'm not that great at it. So anyway, something amazing happened, and I want to tell you about it because for a long time, like I'm talking like 20 years, I couldn't string together more than a few days without getting drunk or intoxicated in some other way. I wanted out of my own head, and I didn't really understand why. So I tried a lot of things. Again, I'm really happy to be at this meeting. I've really been looking forward to it. I see a lot of familiar faces that have helped me achieve sobriety. So far, a lot of the people in this room have helped. And I see a lot of newcomers too. And for a long, long time, I was a newcomer. I remember coming in this room, really sick to my stomach, kind of, not really in the door. Like I was lucky to make it into the room. So a lot of my early days took place in this room and over on Bridge Street. I've lived in other cities where I had to kind of travel quite a distance to get to a meeting, and here we have two going on right now on the same property, and that's pretty awesome too. There's a lot of great recovery in this county, so I'm grateful for that. So again, my name is Anthony. I have about 8.5 months of sobriety. For me, thank you. For me, that's huge because I've tried everything under the sun to string together some sobriety. I tried a lot of things. I've been to treatment 3 times. I've taken the prescription medicine that makes you sick if you drink on it. I drink on it like a real alcoholic would, I've tried taking Tylenol thinking, well, I won't drink if I know I have Tylenol in my stomach because that'll hurt. That's bad for you. Well, I drink anyway like a real alcoholic. So I tried all those things. I went to treatment. It wasn't my idea at first, but I did go to treatment because things had gotten really bad. So I'll give you a short backstory. I grew up here in Visalia. Started drinking around 14, 15 years old. Got sober when I was 34. So for about 20 years, I was going at it pretty hard. I feel fortunate because I could have lost my life a lot of times. I could have taken other people's lives a lot of times. But anyway, so grew up around here, moved to Florida for 20 years, started a family out there, ended up moving back. A lot of moving around. I mentioned to Natasha that I'm the oldest of 9 kids, and that's pretty pretty significant to me. Just because it's my story, and that's kind of a detail for me, I feel like my story came together the way it did. I don't think that I'm an alcoholic because I'm the oldest of 9 kids. Don't get me wrong there. There was a little bit of chaos growing up. I don't think that's why I drank either. I think that it's something that you're born with, where you have what they call a spiritual malady, you know. But because I came to share my story with you, I'll tell you, I grew up here, had a bunch of brothers and sisters, moved out when I was 16, thought I was grown, was gifted a house at like 17 to rent, you know, and, you know, crap hit the fan, you know. I got my GED, took a couple jobs, thought I was grown, and started partying hard. But luckily, I had my first child when I was 20. We moved to Florida, and we stayed there for about 12 years. While I was over in Florida, I realized that I was an alcoholic. Very important piece of information, because if I'm not treating my alcoholism, I don't doubt for a minute that it would kill me eventually. And the time between now and dying, that wouldn't be any way to live at all. You know, so like in the book, they say that this is a vital experience, like vital, like necessary to life, to have these things happen. It was vital if I wanted to live. And I think that's true, because what I was doing before wasn't really living at all. So moving out to Florida, you know, I took a job where I, you know, was drug testing and stuff. And I'll say that just because, you know, this is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and we like to respect the singleness of purpose of our meetings. So our primary purpose is to, you know, deal with the alcoholic that still suffers. There are drugs in this valley and in this state also, you know. They're out there, and they're a part of a lot of our stories. When I mention getting drunk or getting out of my head, I think that can be used interchangeably with chemicals, and that's just my opinion. But for our purposes here, I'm going to talk about alcohol. So I went to Florida, couldn't do drugs because of the job, so I started drinking more, and I thought that was just what a normal way to live was. Alcoholism is progressive, though, so it progressed. It got really, really bad, and you know, one day I realized that I can't drink like a normal person, and that came to me like as a realization that if I want to go to a restaurant and have 2 beers, I better set aside some time in the evening to have 12 more, or set aside a nap time, because it's either go to sleep or drink more. And I knew that wasn't normal, but it just meant I had to plan better, you know. So I knew that wasn't normal. So I kind of started to dabble in the idea of quitting, being sober. But I wasn't nearly ready, and it took what it took. And I've heard that phrase a lot. And you know, there's no sense in going back and beating ourselves up for not getting it 10 years sooner. There's really not. You know, it took what it took, and luckily I found a solution, something that works. So Florida was a good time. I have 2 children. Was fortunate to go to school. The state helped with schooling. I was able to, you know, really use some resources and get a job. I didn't lose that job. That job wasn't taken from me. I gave it away because alcohol was more important. I joined the fire service and worked in emergency medicine, you know, fire rescue, and that was something that was like a dream to me. Worked really hard to get that position, held it for about 7 years, and if you string enough late shows, no call, no shows, things like that, you're gonna get canned eventually, or be asked to resign. So for a long time, that increased my drinking, because it was poor me, you know, they took my job, you know. So my drinking actually got worse when those repercussions came back. A long time ago, I was washing laundry, and I cut my hand on the little agitator thing, you know, when I was pulling my hand out, and it cut my hand. Every single time I reach in a washing machine now, I'm pretty careful, you know, so that, because that's what a normal person does. But when it comes to drinking, I would suffer, what do they say, horrible embarrassment and things the day before. And the next day, well, maybe it wasn't that bad. You know, I'm going to try it again. It's that that amnesia. Anyway, moved to Florida, came back out here, ended up, you know, the marriage was another thing that I gave away because of alcohol. I had tried, I knew I had a problem. It was this alcoholism, this spiritual malady. I tried to bury myself in work. That was another coping mechanism. Work and school, try to stay busy, try to stay out of my own head. That wasn't a solution. That's one of the things that I tried as a solution, but it wasn't a solution. I'll fast forward through that. Came back here to California. Got to a point where things were really bad. My health was going south. I had a job up north. I was up in Davis for a while, and I was trying to hold that together, and it just wasn't going too well. Alcoholism is progressive for sure, and real alcoholism is fatal in my opinion, you know, eventually. So it kept getting worse and worse, to the point where I got up one day, you know, the whites of my eyes are yellow, and you know, all the other things that come along with not taking care of yourself. And somebody that was really close to me at work kind of took me aside, and they made the phone calls and helped get me into a treatment center. And that was fantastic. You know, it was embarrassing leaving work and thinking I have to come back here in 30 days and tell all of you guys I'm an alcoholic. Like, they're not going to understand. Well, it wasn't as bad as I thought, just to put that out there. But I went away for 30 days, and I thought, cool, they'll fix me at the treatment center, and then I can come back, and it'll be cool. And that's really what I thought. And I was in a hurry to get out of there, and I heard that if you invite your family to family day, they're going to tell your family to put you in a sober living home to increase your chances of success. Those jerks, right? I didn't want to go to a sober living home. You know, I wanted to go in, do my 28 days, and get fixed and go home. That's not the way this thing works at all. I did learn a lot from treatment, and treatment does have a very important place, in my opinion. The reason is, I'm trying to beat this disease that has two parts, you know, addiction, alcoholism. The first part is, if I have booze in my system, there's that phenomenon of craving that's going to tell me I need more, I need it now, and nothing's going to stand in the way, you know. So that's the first part, that phenomenon of craving. Once I have it in my system, my body wants more. The second part is that this disease lies to me, tells me I don't have a disease, right? So that kind of sucks, because that part doesn't go away ever, you know. I think I'm prepared for that. Like 10 years from now, I might be, you know, I might get the random thought or see something. I don't like to say that, you know, because it won't be up to me at that point. Hopefully that day I will have given it over to God. I'll see that temptation and think right away with that, you know, they call it a sixth sense that we get once we're recovered. So I like to think that's the way that would go down. But anyway, recovery, going to a recovery center played a big role for me, because I had to get away from that stuff. I had to get away from my old friends for a little while. I had to get that crap out of my system. So going to treatment was great for that. But it's not a quick stop, you know, oil change center, man. It's not gonna fix you. So I left, and I was, you know, drunk in 100 days. So I made it to 100 days. I was really excited, and before I knew it, there was a drink in my hand. You know, it was really weird. So a couple months of increasing, you know, intensity. You know, bad drunks and things like that. We have lots of war stories, but I won't share, you know, any of them really. But I lost my car. Like, I misplaced it. I parked it, and I reported it stolen. And we found it a while later. But after that horrible night, another friend of mine said, "Man, you know, you're right back where you were." I had rented one of these electric bicycles up in Davis and crashed it, and I was all beat to hell. And, I like to think I'm a pretty nice guy, but I get kind of mouthy too. So I was like kind of beat to hell from a couple of different altercations. Like you start lots of fights, lose lots of fights. So I knew it was time to go back. And so this time I had a different idea. I was going to go back, and I'm thinking this time I'm going to take their suggestions. You know, I'm going to go back to treatment and take their suggestions, because I mean treatment isn't cheap either. You know, it's pretty expensive, and I was blessed with another round to go in and really tell them I'm sorry. I was embarrassed to show up at this place again. I'm sorry, I screwed up, but I'm going to take your suggestions. So I went in there, and to the best of my ability at the time, I think I did take their suggestions. I actually stayed 2 weeks longer, so, you know, I stayed 6 weeks, and I thought, you know, I really wanted this. I mean, there were days, mornings, where you wake up and you know, you're too sick to drink, you're too sick not to drink, you can't eat. You know, I wanted it. I wanted to get right and be healthy, but nothing I was doing was working. So I went up there and decided I was going to take their suggestions, and I took most of their suggestions. You know, I decided I was going to get a sponsor, work the steps. I decided I was going to move to Visalia, back to Visalia, be near some family and stuff, and near my kids. I'd been commuting, and that was a mess. But anyway, decided to move back and to take their suggestions. So I got a sponsor and started working with them, but I was half-assing it, for lack of a better word. You know, I really wasn't doing it. In my opinion, when I talk about the program and being in the program and stuff, the program is the 12 steps that are outlined as a program of recovery. The program to me isn't going to meetings. Meetings, I suppose, is part of the program. It's a fellowship. This is where we talk about the program. But the program itself takes place with your sponsor. That's when you guys go through and... I know there are a lot of newcomers in the room, so I don't think it hurts to explain it a little bit, the way it works. But every sponsor is going to have their own way that they want to do it, as long as it, you know, falls under the certain guidelines. More or less, it all comes straight out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But so you're supposed to sit down with your sponsor and work through the 12 steps right out of the book. It's kind of written like a textbook. It's very specific. And it's your job as the alcoholic to reach out to your sponsor, and if you're not getting enough returned energy, to find a new sponsor. And I did end up changing sponsors, and it was because it was no fault of my first sponsor. Just to put that out there, is because I wasn't doing my part, in my opinion. So that's what happened when I took some of the suggestions. I ended up drunk again. So they say this book is meant to be suggestive only. These steps are suggestions. Well, if you want to stay sober, I think you better take them as directions. You know, that's my opinion to you. I heard one of the authors wanted to put in directions in the book, but that was kind of taken out. They didn't want to be overbearing. But anytime you read the book or the word suggestion in the book, you know, I like to think of it as this is the direction. This is what you do next. And it'll tell you when to do it and how to do it also. You know, it's pretty awesome. So, you know, I thought I'd gone in pretty willing. I wanted to take their suggestions. I came out, got a sponsor, started working. But something wasn't quite right. I ended up going back to treatment. And again, with alcohol being progressive, this last time I went to treatment was only for a couple weeks, and it was only for detox. And it was because I couldn't find any a detox center closer. But with this progressive illness, I got up one day and I was sicker than ever, and it had come on faster than ever, you know. And within that short window, I had done a bunch of risky behavior, driven drunk a bunch of times, you know, a ton of other things. Like, a lot of bad stuff could have happened. But anyway, I was blessed with the knowledge that, hey, it's time to go back, get your head on straight and maybe think about something else as another solution. So I decided I was going to do the sober living environment route. I think it is possible to get sober without going to a sober living home, but I'll tell you what, it played a huge part in my story because it gave me some extra accountability to deal with the house managers. For somebody that's been running and, you know, drinking and doing drugs for 20 years, I think that little bit of extra time to reacclimate, work your program, and have that extra accountability of random drug testing or breathalyzers or whatever, that's a godsend, you know. And again, this valley, this county, you know, there are a lot of resources out there. You know, there's a place here in town that helped me out personally. That, you know, their rates are low. AA is not affiliated with anything. That's part of our tradition, so I'm not going to mention their name. If you want to know about what a sober living environment is, I'm happy to mention it and talk with you about it another time. But that was part of my story, was going somewhere to have that extra accountability. So I stayed there for about 6 months. And I skipped over the best part, though, was when I came back from that 2 week stay in treatment, I decided I needed to find a new sponsor, too, and I needed to do something different, obviously. I mean, so what I did was kind of kept my eyes open, found somebody that I thought I could relate to, talked to him, asked him to be my sponsor. He is my sponsor. It's going fantastic. When you're looking for a sponsor, this is really important because this held me up for a long time. I was thinking, wait, I want to pick the right sponsor. I don't want to get it wrong and screw this up. Like, well, that kept me kind of walking in circles for an extra month or two or six, you know, because I'll tell you, it couldn't get screwed up any worse than I was doing it for those 6 months. I should have just reached out, and someone told me if they were stabbed in the gut and they were walking around with a knife hanging out, they have a life-threatening condition, you know, they aren't going to walk into the hospital through the back door and look for someone they can relate to, you know, on a deeper level to fix their life. They're going to look for their first SOB in a white jacket and tell them, you know, help me. You know what to do, right? Help me. So that's my advice when it comes to a sponsor. Find somebody that's willing to work with you, that has the time to work with you, and just say, let's do it. And if we find someone that I can relate to better, that's fine. That should be a happy conversation between you and your sponsor. So I started working with my sponsor, and I told him, look, here's my pattern that I had noticed, because I still thought I kind of had it all, you know, figured out a little bit, but I had picked up on a pattern. I would get real fired up to get sober for about 6 months, 90 days, 100 days, and then that fire would burn out. And because I hadn't had a spiritual experience, when that fire burned out, I was caught with my pants down, you know. And and every time, that's the way it went. So I was thinking, okay, I have 90 or 100 days of you know, being on fire for sobriety. And then I know that flame's going to go out. That's about as long as my willpower is going to carry me. So I need something bigger than me to happen, you know, during those 90 days. So I told my sponsor, you know, these treatment centers were asked, like, what's your success rate? You know, and that's like a touchy subject. Well, you know, obviously, you can't treat a spiritual condition with, you know, the wrong tools. So, of course, their success rates are going to be low, but they do what they're supposed to do, in my opinion. Now, they look at AA and they say, well, what's your success rate? Well, it's kind of harder to pinpoint, in my opinion, first of all. But second of all, they do have a promise in there. They promise that rarely do they see someone fail if they thoroughly follow all these suggestions. If you take all of our suggestions, we rarely see somebody fail. That was more of a guarantee than I'd gotten from anybody else, so I was willing to really just go for it. Every speaker that I had heard that had some sobriety strung together had worked the steps, and not just 1, 2, and 3. You know, they'd gotten to it. So I told my sponsor, I think I understand these steps, and I think I want to work through them, and I want to work through them quickly, but I want to be thorough. And it just, luckily, he understood what I was trying to say, and we got through it, you know, and we worked through it. And it's something that you know, to me, step work is not like some side project that, like, I'm kind of, you know, doing some self-help, you know, when I'm feeling lousy. That had to be kind of a priority to me. I had to go to the, I ended up spending a lot of time in the libraries, you know, because, like, there's a lot of reading. There's a lot of work that goes on in your head. There's a lot of work. There's some work that goes on paper. And for me, I needed to be away from any distractions. So step work was a priority to me, and it had to be, because I knew I only had that 90-day window to have a spiritual experience, or else, you know, all bets were off. So, you know, I was kind of in pursuit of the spiritual experience, and I had heard about it, and I was kind of reaching out, and, you know, there's a ton of content out there. These talks that we hear are recorded. Mike, thanks for running the system and doing that. You can go on, you know, AA or any number of apps. And so I was trying to absorb all this knowledge. And one thing that everybody had in common that had succeeded was that they had worked the 12 steps, had a spiritual experience, and then they had finally gotten that recovery that they were after. So my sponsor was on board with that. He said, we're going to do it. We'll do it quickly, but we're going to do it thoroughly too. And he did slow me down a couple times. But in my opinion, steps 1, 2, and 3 can be knocked out, I'd say in a day or two, you know. I mean, a lot of people have issues with their higher power. That was one of the biggest hurdles for me to get over. I mentioned working in emergency medicine. Like, you see people getting hurt that didn't deserve to get hurt, you know, and you think, why in the world would a loving, all-powerful God let this happen? You know, that was the biggest thing holding me back. Well, I heard an explanation. It said it's not for us to understand. It's not for us to ask why this stuff happens. It's just for us to ask, you know, like, what do I do with it? Where can I be of maximum service? You know, that's our role. We're not the manager. We don't need to know why Timmy got stuck in a well, or, you know, any of that stuff. That's not for us to really know. So, anyway, steps 1, 2, and 3, I think, are realizing that I can't, he can, and I think I'll let him, you know. And those are huge. And I understand some people are going to, it's going to take a little bit longer to get past that higher power thing. A lot of my buddies were very set against it, and for any different number of reasons, they think, why would God let these bad things happen? That's one way to sabotage your own sobriety, I guess. Another one would be, how could God love me if I've done such awful things? You know, well, that's a great question. I heard a great answer, which was cool. God loves us because we're His. You know, if Mike. I have two kids. If one of them came up in a bad mood one day and spit on me and told me they hate me, well, that's bummed, but they're mine, you know, whatever, you know. Little kid in a third world country was terribly disfigured, right? They had never seen their own reflection because they're in a third world country or whatever. They were terribly disfigured, all these horrible things, and had never looked in a mirror. Her little brother brought a mirror that he found in the dump or something, showed it to him, and the little kid looks at it and starts bawling and says, How can mom and dad love me? I look like this. I'm scary. You know, how could you love me? And they say, we love you because you're ours. You know, it doesn't matter what horrible things you did. So that's how I think God looks at me. Even though I've done things when I knew better, He loves us because we're His. And so if you think God can't love you because of what you did, you're His. You know, it's like you're His kid. You know, on that same tangent, God loves us regardless of what we did. People have harmed us, and we're holding a grudge against a lot of them. I was holding a grudge against a lot of them. Well, they're God's kids too. They were, the way I was taught to look at it, they were so messed up. It was so messed up of them to come and harm me in that way. But the reason they did that is because they were spiritually sick themselves. There's something going on with them. It's not up to me to diagnose them, but they were spiritually sick. Just like when I did those things that were out of character, I was spiritually sick. So Part of your fourth step, even though it looks like it's there to punish you, it's there to walk you through letting those people go. You know, part of the fourth step is to look at that list of people and forgive them one at a time. And if you don't mean it at first, there were a couple people I didn't want to forgive, you know. So I had to kind of sit there and pray it until I meant it. You know, God, grant me the patience and understanding that I would grant a sick person, you know. This person is obviously sick. Why would they have done this to, you know, they were obviously sick. I'm asking for forgiveness for myself. Why shouldn't they get forgiven? Like they said, we're all God's children. We're going to God saying, I want this relationship with you. Well, don't come to me wanting a relationship when you're telling me you hate my child, you know, one of his other children. Like, smooth that over. Let's, you know. So, anyway, that's how I kind of got over the higher power thing, because that was a huge hurdle. But steps 1, 2, and 3, I can't, he can, I think I'll let him. The fourth steps, all those resentments that we have, I'll try to speed it up. I have like five minutes left, I think. So all these resentments are things that we they were explained to me as like pain that we let that we feel again, like pain to redo something, like to feel it again, and centuri means to feel, I guess. So to feel these resentments over and over, that's really like giving somebody else a lot of power over your attitude for the day. First of all, second of all, it's hard to have a heart that's. You don't want to cut your heart off from the sunlight of the Spirit, is how I've heard it said. And don't be put off by the, you know, kind of cheesy terms or whatever. But when something pops in my head and I think, well, is it okay to do this? Like, is it okay to go gambling? Like, I'm an alcoholic. Should I go gambling? You know, the question that I ask myself, does it cut my heart off from the sunlight of the Spirit? Because, like, if I might be an alcoholic, if I go out and smoke a blunt, right? That might cut me off from the sunlight of the Spirit. That might cut off my communication with my higher power, because I need that communication with God, that back and forth. So, anyway, the sunlight of the Spirit. The reason I said that, it sounds kind of goofy to me, but resentments were explained to me as like ice around our heart that had been like layered over and over and over, right? You know, that person burned you, that person hurt you, your childhood was a mess. All these things have created layers and layers and layers of ice around your heart, making it hard, right? So the fourth step, even though it looks like a punishment, it's actually going to free you, because you're going to look at your heart, you're going to let the sunlight of the Spirit in, you know, and it's going to melt away those resentments as you pray on them one at a time. And those are going to fall away, and they're not going to control you anymore. So that's huge. That's part of the beginning of the step work in there. I think the faster you can get onto the step work, the chances are that this thing might stick. Because somewhere around, I think the third, I had a really big spiritual experience during the third step. And there was something about being with my sponsor, and he says, you can read this at home, we can read this together. I said, in the book they say sometimes it's helpful to get on your knees with the sponsor and say this prayer out loud. I want to do it by the book. You know, this is very important to me. This is, you know, this is my story. So we did. We knelt down in the room in Bridge Street after the meeting, and we said the third step prayer, and it was giving God the driver's wheel back. And so it was a huge relief off of me. You know, I wasn't responsible for you know, steering anymore. My buddy Elliot says, now my job's just to pedal. I'm going to let God steer now, because every time I steer, I crash. I'm going to let God pedal now. That's the third step. And man, I'll tell you, there are spiritual experiences that come on slowly and some that come on quickly. That was one that came on quickly. Another one was when the fourth step was over. I sat down with my sponsor for about 3 hours, and we read and read, and we prayed on it, and we talked about it. And man, I walked out of there just light, you know. So that was after that point, I feel like that obsession to drink was gone. You know, we're not protected against the thought or a beer commercial or anything, but that obsession was lifted. And that's amazing to me, because there were days that I really could not go 24 hours, you know. So for me to string together, you know, 9 months is a huge, huge thing. And I'm really looking forward to being able to sponsor some guys in the near future. My sponsor's laid out the way he wants me to do that, and I'm going to follow his suggestions. What he's doing is showing me what worked for him. And, hey, you know, that's what I've been trying so hard to obtain, is what he has, you know, that peace of mind. For so long, I wanted out of my own head, to the point where I would drink or smoke or whatever. He has that peace that I wanted. And after I did what he told me worked for him, I have a lot of that peace that he has. I can lay down at night and be okay with those thoughts that are bouncing around. They're going to bounce around. They're going to come and go. Another thought's going to come and go. And I can live with myself now. And it's because of the program. And the program is the 12 steps of AA. And really, that's about all that I have. I mean, it worked where nothing else worked. It really did, and it's going to keep working. Thank you.